Good of you to come, Entwistle.
Timothy raised himself up in his chair as he held out a hand. He was a big man with a marked resemblance to his brother, Richard. But what was strength in Richard, in Timothy, was weakness. The mouth was irresolute, the chin very slightly receding, the eyes less deep-set. Lines of peevish irritability showed on his forehead. His invalid status was emphasized by the rug across his knees and a positive pharmacopoeia of little bottles and boxes on a table at his right hand.
"I mustn't exert myself," he said warningly. "Doctor's forbidden it. Keeps telling me not to worry. Worry! If he'd had a murder in his family, he'd do a bit of worrying, I bet. It's too much for a man. First Richard's death, then hearing all about his funeral and his will. And what a will! And on top of that, poor little Cora killed with a hatchet. Hatchet! This country's full of gangsters nowadays, thugs left over from the war, going about killing defenceless women. Nobody's got the guts to put these things down, to take a strong hand. What's the country coming to, I'd like to know? What's the damn country coming to?"
Mr. Entwistle was familiar with this gambit. It was a question almost invariably asked sooner or later by his clients for the last 20 years, and he had his routine for answering it. The non-committal words he uttered could have been classified under the heading of soothing noises.
"It all began with that damned Labour government," said Timothy, "sending the whole country to blazes, and the government we've got now is no better. Mealy-mouthed, milk-and-water socialists. Look at the state we're in. Can't get a decent gardener, can't get servants. Poor Maud here has to work herself to a shadow, messing about in the kitchen. Oh, by the way, I think a custard pudding would go well with the sole tonight, my dear, and perhaps a little clear soup first. I've got to keep my strength up. Dr. Barton said so. Let me see, where was I? Oh, yes, Cora. It's a shock, I can tell you, to a man when he hears his sister, his own sister, has been murdered. Why, I had palpitations for 20 minutes. You'll have to attend to everything for me, Entwistle. I can't go to the inquest or be bothered by business of any kind connected with Cora's estate. I want to forget the whole thing. What happened, by the way, to Cora's share of Richard's money? It comes to me, I suppose?" Murmuring something about clearing away tea, Maud left the room. Timothy lay back in his chair and said, "Good thing to get rid of the women. Now we can talk business without any silly interruptions." "The sum left in trust for Cora," said Mr. Entwistle, "goes equally to you and the nieces and nephew." "But look here!"
Timothy's cheeks assumed a purplish hue of indignation.
"Surely I'm her next of kin, only surviving brother."
Mr. Entwistle explained with some care the exact provisions of Richard Abernethy's will, reminding Timothy gently that he had had a copy sent him.
"Don't expect me to understand all that legal jargon, do you?" said Timothy ungratefully. "You lawyers! Matter of fact, I couldn't believe it when Maud came home and told me the gist of it. Thought she'd got it wrong. Women are never clear-headed. Best woman in the world, Maud, but women don't understand finance. I don't believe Maud even realizes that if Richard hadn't died when he did, we might have had to clear out of here. Fact!"
"Surely, if you had applied to Richard—" Timothy gave a short bark of harsh laughter.
"That's not my style. Our father left us all a perfectly reasonable share of his money. That is, if we didn't want to go into the family concern. I didn't. I've a soul above corn plasters, Entwistle. Richard took my attitude a bit hard. Well, what with taxes, depreciation of income, one thing and another, it hasn't been easy to keep things going. I've had to realize a good deal of capital. Best thing to do these days. I did hint once to Richard that this place was getting a bit hard to run. He took the attitude that we'd be much better off in a smaller place altogether. Easier for Maud, he said. More labor-saving. Labor-saving! What a term! Oh, no! I wouldn't have asked Richard for help. But I can tell you, Entwistle, that the worry affected my health most unfavorably. A man in my state of health oughtn't to have to worry. Then Richard died, and though, of course, naturally I was cut up about it, my brother and all that, I couldn't help feeling relieved about future prospects. Yes, it's all plain sailing now, and a great relief. Get the house painted. Get a couple of really good men on the garden. You can get them at a price. Restock the rose garden completely, and, where was I?
Detailing your future plans.
Yes, 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 but I mustn't bother you with all that. What did hurt me, and hurt me cruelly, were the terms of Richard's will.
Indeed, Mr. Entwistle looked inquiringly. They were not, as you expected?
I should say they weren't. Naturally, after Mortimer's death, I assumed that Richard would leave everything to me.
Ah, did he ever indicate that to you?
Well, he never said so, not in so many words. Reticent sort of chap, Richard. But he asked himself here, not long after Mortimer's death, wanted to talk over family affairs generally. We discussed young George and the girls and their husbands, wanted to know my views. Not that I could tell him much. I'm an invalid, and I don't get about. And Maudie and I live out of the world. Rotten, silly marriages both of those girls made, if you ask me.
"Well, I ask you, Entwistle. Naturally, I thought he was consulting me as the head of the family, after he was gone, and naturally I thought the control of the money would be mine. Richard could surely trust me to do the right thing by the younger generation, and to look after poor old Cora. Dash it all, Entwistle. I'm an Abernethy. The last Abernethy. Full control should have been left in my hands."